This is Chandu Nayar here. Welcome to Entrevista interview with Srikant Palam, founder and CMD of publicly listed company Foursoft, which was recently renamed Palred Technologies. In August 2013, just about 2 odd months ago, Foursoft sold its logistics software business to the US-based Kevil Group for $43.4 million, which is roughly about 240 crore rupees. Srikant, welcome to this interview and congratulations once again on the transaction with the Kevil Group.
Thank you, Chandu.
Yeah. The first question we have is really on the exit itself. Foursoft is the only serious enterprise software product company that is publicly listed in India. And everybody thought it was very difficult to build a product software company from out of India and take it public. And even now your logistics product is winning a lot of customers, prestigious ones at that, abroad, overseas. So why the decision to sell the core business of logistics software now?
Come to a situation where two things have happened. The shareholders, some of them have come in more than 10 years back. They are also looking for an exit. Second, in the domain, the big players like SAP and Oracle have started to come, which means we need to raise more money and become bigger and better and stronger. We also need to be financially stronger to play at a bigger level. For us to raise money was difficult because we were already public listed and our share price was quoting very low, because in India the stock markets were not really in favor of the product businesses, nor did they fully understand, and we were very small, and small companies were not very attractive to investors. We used to be very, very attractive to shareholders until 2007, but things changed after that. So, given all of these limitations, including, you know, Kotak was a private equity investor in our company, they also wanted to exit. They finished their window of 7 years of investment, you know, a window. So, it was in the interest of shareholders, some of our maybe management, and obviously our customers, that we take an exit. And above all this, the valuation was good. Actually, the valuation was more than 43.4. That does not include, non-compete fee and the receivables adjustment, working capital adjustment, etc. that was paid, and the debt that they have adjusted. So it is slightly higher than, it's about 47 million. So the valuation was good. So at 62 rupees, it was about 275 crores approximately. So it's, whereas the stock market was valuing it at only 60 crores. So it's a good difference.
Excellent. Now that you've gone through this, the sale, and you mentioned several things about, you know, other investors being around, their window being exhausted, and some investors being for around for 10 years, plus you're building a team of founder managers, for example, your CEO and CFO. What are the key lessons that you would say that you take away from both internal and external in managing such a transaction?
You're talking about the company or only the transaction?
Overall, but specifically with respect to this transaction.
Okay. With respect to the transaction, there are a lot of things you can learn, because we have always been on the buying side. We have been buying, from 2005 until 2008. We spent almost $30 million in acquisitions, actually more, 35. Whereas when we have sold, but at that time we did not have adequate cash. Most of the money we used for acquiring was from debt. So when you acquire a product company, you have to make sure you're also able to digest it. After acquiring, you will still need a lot of money for restructuring and for further investment and for going forward, which we did not have. So today the lesson for us is, when we are in a position to acquire, we made those mistakes, whereas those were rectified here by the party that is acquiring us. Because Kevil is the acquiring company, but the true owner is Francisco Partners. And Francisco Partners is coming with a average ticket size of, I don't know, maybe $300 to $500 million to build one domain or one unit of a company. So our acquisition, let us say approximately, is less than $50 million. They will do few more and they will further make more investments. Most attractive in our company was two things. Number one was technology. Number two was the domain knowledge and the strength of business process, or what you would call the functionality or depth in the product itself, or completeness as you would want to call it. what is the second lesson that I would take away from here? If you believe that if you have good technology, good understanding of a business need or a business process, or there is a gap in the industry that needs to be fulfilled with a specific technology and a product with a certain business process, if you believe in it, no matter how long it takes, you definitely need perseverance in life. Because today, if we have got this value for the company, it is not because of the revenue we are having or the profit we are having. More than 50% of the valuation we have got is only for our technology and for our product. So the lesson number two here is, though we have spent millions of dollars in acquiring companies, like I said earlier, the lesser amount that we have spent on building good technology, good product, good business process, good solutions, that has given us a true return.
The other small thing that I want to check with you with respect to the transaction management was the issue of communication, you know, and getting all the key stakeholders, especially employees, other investors or whatever on board. How exactly did you manage that process?
Okay, excellent. Very good question. See, in our case, we are a public listed company. So there are certain do's and don'ts. We always go through a third party, an investment banker, because then there is some merit and validation to what you have done. Otherwise, you could have, you know, if you do directly, you can manipulate matters. The second thing is, you have to maintain confidentiality of the highest order. The day that we announced this transaction, our share price was trading at about 13 or 14 rupees per share on the stock market. If this information was leaked or misused by anyone in the management team or in the investor or by myself or by some stock brokers and dealers or traders in the market, they could have purchased this share even for 30, 40 rupees and they could have still made 100% profit within 1 month. So we made sure that when the activity was progressing, we always told our staff or management or anybody who needed to know that this was a strategic relationship. This was what you would call a relationship that would come with investment, but we never positioned it as, you know, a sale of a company, because once you say that, then the information gets out. Once, if you are not telling the people, it is, you know, a sale, and you are not telling them that because, you know, you are compiling information which is all in public domain, but you are sharing. You are getting visitors who are listening to your presentation. This is all information in public domain, but you are sharing. So people will ask questions. Customers will ask questions. Rumors will get out. Your management will ask questions. So I think under such a situation, it is all about trust and faith. Your management trusts that you will do something ultimately which is in their interest, or they don't trust you. If they think that you will, you know, shortchange them, hit them and leave them in the lurch, in the cold and just scoot yourself, then you will have a difficulty. In our case, I think the staff and the management generally had a transparent and a healthy relationship, so we had no concerns on that end. So the communication was always giving them adequate information, giving them adequate comfort, but never divulging the fact that it was a sale. Now the second side, you have basically board members. In the board members, convincing them is a very easy thing, because there are either shareholding board members or there are independent board members. In this case, we were getting a valuation which was over 2 times the revenue. And this was, I think, about 9 times the EBITDA multiple. If you compare this with other transactions that are happening in the marketplace, we got as good or better than other deals. Yes, the only thing is, we were also at some kind of an inflection point. Our products were also getting completed. We could have also gone aggressively into sales and maybe built it. But again, like I said earlier, that would again require substantial investments, which we were not in a position to make.
So now I just want to take you back a little bit in time, you know, to when you began, and you come from a family where your father was an advocate and then a chief justice, and then you yourself were, and your brother also were engineers, your sister is a lawyer, and from an engineer, that too from a prestigious REC Trichy, now called NIT, NIT, and thereafter doing your MS from Stanford. What really prompted you to get into entrepreneurship?
Okay. To come back to India and live here. If I wanted to live outside after Stanford, working in Singapore, I always knew I would need to do it for a limited period of time to save some money, maybe enough to build a house, that kind of money, and come back. But when I came back, wanting to be an entrepreneur was there on my mind from day one. However, whatever entrepreneurial venture I take up, they were always any entrepreneurship, any business is coming with risk. Let us be clear about it. But there are certain businesses with a higher risk component. For example, if you are doing trading, you are setting up a shop, or if you are setting up a petrol bank or something, you know, it is less of a risk. But if you are setting up, I was trying to, like for example, Fortnox, which is a product company, is a risk because you have to invest, I don't know, maybe 50 crores, 100 crores in R&D, build a product, and then if it doesn't work, then you're in trouble. So similarly, one of my first ventures was to build the Indian equivalent of what you would call a McDonald's. So I tried to build a chain of restaurants with dosa as the, you know, key, main flagship item. It was called Doza, D-O-Z-A-Z-Z, and it was looking funky. It used to be like not funky, it was looking very children and family friendly, with red and yellow and black colors and disposable trays and plates, you know, papers. It was like a fast food concept, central kitchen, serving small outlets, branded. But when you try to do these kinds of businesses, which are very high risk, that means you're trying to create a brand. You're trying to create a concept which does not exist in the country today. It wasn't like an Udupi restaurant. An Udupi restaurant would definitely do well. There is very low risk in it. You just have to find the right place. You have to invest the right amount of money and work hard and get the team. Then people will anyway come and eat there. But when you try to create things like this, it is risky. When that failed, I chose the easier way out to be whatever, you know, semi-entrepreneur. Venture partner in India for Emery. It was a US very, very large listed company that has now got merged into UPS, which is, you know, United Parcel Service, the US. I guess it is the largest logistics company in US or maybe in the world now. So that was very good. 4 years, I could set up that company successfully. We crossed 120 crores turnover. We used to make 6-7 crores profit per year, even in the transport business. After all this, I mean, I'm talking about after tax, which was about 6-7% net PAT, is a good margin in that industry. So at that point, when I wanted to leave, they acquired my share in a mutually what you call acceptable, keeping bridges intact and goodbye kind of a relationship. I left there. So becoming an entrepreneur was always there from the time I came back to India, but the first venture failed. So I took the Emery venture because of only two reasons. It was safer. I did not have to invest too much money. I was still getting a good payroll structure. I was given a nice expatriate term to stay in Delhi and work to build this company. I had 20% ownership in the business. The only thing I didn't have was the incentive plan. But if the company became successful, I knew I would get value for my 20%, which is what happened exactly. So once I got value for that, I was in a position to take bigger risks. That means I could survive for a few years, even not have salary, I could survive with a small company, even if I did not get funding. But that was not the case. I got the funding within first 3 months, so it was easy. That risk also was gone. So for the first 5 years, until we went public issue, I wasn't even taking any salary, but it wasn't required at all. And I was just getting investment and building this company. And so that is how the entrepreneurship worked. Okay. It worked only because first time I failed, second time I did in a safer environment and made money and came out, and the third time I was in a position to take that risk for the length of that period and time, and it paid off.
So you kind of went through the classic primary school, middle school, and then high school route to entrepreneurship.
If you want to call it that.
No, I just want to ask you, you know, you started Foursoft. Is it the name Foursoft because it was a fourth venture?
Actually, we wanted to simply establish a logo called 4F.
Oh, okay.
The authorities at that time did not allow us to register a company called 4F, number 4 and F.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to register a full name called Foursoft Limited and then use that logo 4S, because 4S stands for our product, you know, supply chain shipping software solution.
Yes.
So our product is called 4S eTrans, 4S eLog, 4S, you know, VisiLog, like that. Yeah.
Okay. Now, but how did you decide, you know, from a logistics, you're a hardcore logistics supply chain guy. From that, what made you look at software, and how did you identify that there is an opportunity, a gap in this particular marketplace?
Oh, very good. See, after Stanford, my first job was in HP in Singapore.
Yes.
I was the logistics manager or whatever, in charge of the English-speaking countries of Asia Pacific when I left. So, and the HP's at that time used to have a very large manufacturing operation and very, very large logistics operations in Asia. You know, all the printers and PCs and cartridges, billions of dollars. So, number one, I got my experience of running logistics there, and I saw that all of the software and ERPs or whatever automation was done was always focused on manufacturing and finance. Once you go out of the four walls of a factory, your automation and you know, IT systems, processes, infrastructure was very, very weak. And if that is the situation for HP, you can imagine how it will be for other guys. Second, when I was working through in Emory and subsequently what became UPS, I know exactly what systems we were using across the world. Now, all of these systems, some of the limitation came because of the technology. All of these systems were built on what you would call legacy or one-tier application. And then sometime in the mid-90s, late-90s, you got the two-tier architecture, which is the client-server. But by 2000, internet became the big thing. And everybody was, not everybody, most people were using internet for building dot-com companies and e-commerce platforms. That was the time I saw three opportunities. Number one, the IT solutions in logistics, transportation, supply chain were fundamentally weak because you had multiple processes and multiple physical locations that had to be brought together. Like, for example, in a transport company, you will have one office in Hyderabad, one in Mumbai, one in New York, one in Washington, one in London, one in Tokyo. Bringing them together is difficult. Number two, the business processes done in each location are different. Somebody is doing trucking, somebody is doing air freighting, somebody is doing sea freighting, somebody is doing customs. Bringing them together is very difficult. To make matters more complex, you have a shipper and you have a consignee. If these two countries are in the same country, it is okay. If they are in two different countries, you not only have two different customers to service in one shipment, you have two different customers in two different countries, and both of them are transacting in two different currencies with you. So this brings lot of complexity in business processes. To solve this problem or attack this opportunity, using internet, J2EE, three tiers, was also new in the market. So we combined all of these things together and came out with a solution which went on to become the product of Foston.
Okay, now one of the interesting...
The third point was, I was a native of Hyderabad. I wanted to go back to Hyderabad. And Hyderabad at that time was the Java capital of India.
Correct.
So I knew getting the resources in Hyderabad was going to be easy. That also fell in place nicely.
Okay, one of the interesting things that you did in 99 or so is also to raise capital, angel investment kind of, from your colleagues in HP, Emory and all that.
Correct.
Tell me, how did that work in at a time when in India 99, you know, people did not know about these concepts? How did you manage to convince people?
Okay, very good, very good. See, the people that you can approach easily are people that you know, number one. Number two, the people that you know and you can approach, they also must be investors, or that means they should be wealthy people and they must have extra money to invest in businesses. Now, if where will such people be? They will usually come from your own work environment. They could be people you worked with, they could be your bosses, your ex-bosses who have gone out and done something, or who are still in the company and have extra cash and they want to invest. In my case, wherever I go, I serve minimum 4, maximum 5 years. I did the same thing in HP, I did the same thing in Emory, and of course in Foresoft I did much more than 5 years, maybe 7 full time. So this way, both the people that I worked for in HP as well as in Emory, even up to CEO level, because I was already in a mid-management level position, I had access to top management people in these companies, and I could easily approach them. So most of the people who invested in the first round, because I had already invested from my earnings, and if you have credibility, if people know you, if you've already invested money yourself, convincing others is not very difficult at all. If you are not in a position to invest any money on your own, that is where you have a challenge. But in this case, even if I had not invested the money, I think I would have got this investment of the angels, because I was producing the other two. I was producing proof of domain knowledge and clearly establishing the fact that there was a gap in the market which needs to be addressed, and there was a good opportunity.
I just also wanted to find out, after 5 years, you know, you went in for an IPO, and that too after you raised money from both UTI Ventures and Venture East. At that point in time, what made you think of even going public?
Okay, very good. There are two things. We definitely wanted to be a, you know, we wanted to raise money. There was no doubt about it, number one. Number two, there were angel investors and first round investors who needed to get exit. Number three, we also, you see, those days this private equity investing large amounts of money wasn't so common. I'm talking about 2003 actually. So for us, and generally those days, public and IPOs were a very good source of raising money, because institutional money was coming there. And in our case, we had two advantages. Number one, our investment banker, he came with a very good advice. Our requirement, I think, was about 28 crores or 30 crores. I can't remember exactly. So what he did was 25 crores, I think. So what he did was he brought 8 crores from UTI Ventures and Venture East, and he did the balance of 20 crores through an IPO. So could I have got 28 crores from one single or two, you know, private equity partners or venture capital guys at that time? The answer is maybe not. Three, I think given all models of business, in my opinion, this is my personal opinion, yes, it is best to operate as a public listed entity than remain private and get too much private equity or get all these convertibles and, you know, whatever other options you have. because those are very rigid, those are very tight. I mean, we all assume that all investors will be reasonable and fair and everything. But then the entire operation of the company is limited to the chemistry of the promoter with the 2-3 key investors or private equity players, which is not the most healthy thing. If it works, it is great. But very often, we even till today, after so many years of maturity of private equity, we still see a lot of friction between promoters and private equity players.
Correct. So the
which is high.
Yeah, which
when things don't go well. Whereas if you are listed, you get two advantages. Number one, you are automatically compliant. And if you are an honest guy, if you are dishonest, okay, no matter what rules there are, you can cheat. But as a listed company, your transparency, your compliance, your reporting, etc. is already built into your business process. You have an internal auditor, you have an external audit, you have a detailed audit, you have summary level audit, so many things that are required. You have to have board meetings, you have to have independent directors, you have to report your results in a quarterly basis within 45 days. So many things are brought into, and if you deal with yourself, if there is a interested party transaction, you have to report to ROC, you have to get approval from ROC, you have to report to SEBI, you have to go for a even an EGM or an AGM if required. So these are the good things that automatically bring some sense of, you know, and in India, fortunately, cost of being up is not high. It is not like in US with all these Sarbanes-Oxley and those kinds of compliances. Here, you can always find good independent directors without having to pay them too much. The only thing that will cost you a little high is you have to appoint one of these bigger auditors. Those audit firms will charge you a little more. The cost of company secretary and a team of one other person is not very high in India. And the amount of time and effort they spend for compliance is not very high. The number of shareholder grievances, etc. that you get if you're running everything efficiently is very little. So these are one set of reasons. The second and a more important reason, I think, if you are competing in an international and a global market, if you're an Indian company, that you are a product company, your credibility and respectability to deal with a client will be much higher if you say you are a listed company than you are a private limited company, even with the biggest and the best of the private equity players being investors in your business. Because they may help you. I'm not saying they won't help you. The private equity guys, if they've invested big amounts, they may help you meet some customers where they have invested, they may help you. But in terms of credibility and respectability with a client, if you're chasing, by saying you're public listed is much better. And the third and the last is, if you are going for an acquisition and you don't have cash with you, you can always use your stock as currency to do an acquisition and earn that value back over a period of time. That flexibility will always be there with you, which you won't have with a private equity player. Because if you want to merge somebody else into equity in your company, then he will come in with his own conditions that may or may not be met by you and the guy you are targeting to buy.
Correct. So now that you talked about acquisitions, let me jump into that topic, you know, because in roughly about 2 odd years, you made about 5 acquisitions. And sometimes I think somewhere you have said that some of these leveraged acquisitions in Europe kind of boomeranged on Foresoft, you know. So either 2 questions here. One is the drivers for these acquisitions. And secondly, what lessons as an entrepreneur, for an Indian entrepreneur particularly, would you, or advice would you give, you know, for when you do these acquisitions?
Sure, very good. I think one part of it I answered earlier, but in a brief manner.
Yes.
Actually, we did 2 large acquisitions. One was DCS in UK, which came with an office in Netherlands and US. And the second was Transaxiom, which came with their office in Denmark and in Australia. What are the pitfalls? What should you look out for as an Indian? There are plenty of things. Number one, you have to make sure you have enough money to digest whatever you acquire. So what I'm trying to say is, when we look for an acquisition, we only think of biting it. You must think of chewing it. You must think of swallowing it. You must think of digesting it. You must think of everything that will happen after you acquire. Everything. how you will actually swallow and digest it. We were small, and the company that we acquired was much bigger. So we had not thought through some of those things as to, you know, like after biting, how to swallow it, how to digest it, kind of thing. Number two, there will be cultural differences, and we will try to enforce an entrepreneurial spirit on a company that has been in existing for 20 years. There, the people are complacent. Those companies and businesses are running only to pay the salary of the staff, and as long as that is done and that is met, everybody is happy there. They are not bothered about the shareholder and the owner. Ultimately, what you are trying to do as management is serve the interest of the shareholder. So you will get into a conflict with them. So you have to make sure, if you are acquiring a company, that company is blending into you with a sense of growth plan and not sitting on the verge of its own retirement. Its own retirement means the people in that company are thinking like, you know, I will just let this company survive for another 5 years and then retire and go. What can you do to make him target 30% growth year on year? He's not interested. In our case, one company in the Netherlands got into dispute with the French government company, and there were 30 employees in our Dutch office whose salaries we had to pay every month. Culturally, there's nothing you can do. If you terminate, you have to pay them 6 months' salary. On the other hand, the customer who was using those 30 people suddenly stopped. He withheld all the payments of more than 1 million euros. There's nothing you can do. One day you don't have receivables of 1 million euro not coming. So the next day you're not even accessing your invoices. And at the same time, you have to pay salaries of 200,000 euro per month with no income whatsoever against them. If you ask them to leave, you have to pay another 1.2 million euro. So by the time you come out of this mess, you are minus 3, 4 million euro, which is, let's say, $5 million. Now, our entire cost of acquisition was only $18 million. Our debt already was $11 million. When there is a management team and they are not owners, remember, if you're buying such companies, be very careful and make sure that it's not a management team which has actually made an ambition or plan to acquire that company themselves. Because if you do that, you are actually trying to buy loyalty of somebody whose objective is in conflict with your own. How will he ever be loyal to you and show his integrity to you and show it? He will do everything to fail you. He will do everything to put you back in trouble so that he can buy the company again from you. So those are very risky ones. Be careful. That is the third advice I would give anybody who wants to acquire a company outside of India.
Okay, that's very useful inputs actually, and I learned quite a bit myself. Now, looking back, what are the four or five things that Foresoft did very right along its journey to become the success that it eventually became?
So the first one, to go into logistics and supply chain with wherever there were huge amount of gaps in business and in technology and product companies. And there was, see, even till today, we have no competitor in entire India, entire Asia actually. So second is technology. Because we had a superior technology, we could easily compete with our foreign competitors. We could go into any market and tell our customers or potential customers, technologically we are the most advanced. If you find anything better and cheaper than this, or even complete, forget even cheaper, we will give our software for free. This is the kind of challenge we would throw at them, that aggressively we could, because we were confident that our technology was definitely advanced, superior, complete, and we were the first to get there. The third thing we did right was all our shareholders, whether they were small retail or the original investors who came in, or the, you know, financial investors like Kotak, who we respect a lot. We had an extremely good relationship with them. In fact, some of the board meetings and AGMs are conducted in my absence with them running them. So as far as the shareholder trust and confidence is concerned, we have always enjoyed it, because from the beginning, rule number three, we maintain certain level of what I would call integrity, transparency, compliance, cleanliness, It doesn't sound very big, but usually there will be temptation when the money comes into the company and the promoter knows there is cash in his business, or he's doing something with it, he's buying, selling. There will be temptations, there will be opportunities, there will be, even if you have no intention, people will come and give you those ideas. So through all of those, you know, situations, the management of the company, I'm saying not just myself, the management of the company has been simply, in one word, honest. Until the last day, until even this transaction was done, we did not leak the information, we did not manipulate it. For example, if all the management had gone and bought the shares of this company, even at 25 rupees, they would have made money today, but nobody purchased.
Thank you for participating in this Entrevista interview and sharing your experience and learning. We wish you the very best in both your business and political lives going forward.